Hello, I'm Jeremiah, and this is Christian Anarchy, doing my best to ensure the separation of church and state by ridding the world of the state. We begin with concluding remarks, break up the pieces and examine the parts. Your words always cut when they're cliche, but here's my knife because I came for the buffet. This is the way it goes. Good day. I hope you are doing well. For those of you listening to the episodes in order, like sensible and sane human beings, you will already know what we are going to discuss today. We just finished a general overview of law in a free society, and we are stopping by the idea of land ownership on our way to talking about environmental protections in an anarchic society. We won't spend too much time on this topic in particular, as I wouldn't suggest anything all that different than what occurs now and has occurred historically to decide who owns what piece of land and what rights go along with the ownership of the piece of land. For those of you familiar with this at all, go ahead and skip this episode. I doubt I'll say anything new. Because today will merely be a brief overview, I won't anticipate as many potential questions as I often do, so you may have more questions for me than usual. By now, you are well aware you can email me at jeremiahjm@gmail.com for questions, comments, or rebuttals. The first question to ask is, how does land come to be owned in the first place? How does a chunk of the earth go from the state of being owned to being unowned? It is a unique concept to think about for most, because most have never considered it. Some argue pieces of the earth cannot be owned at all, and instead are either perpetually unowned or perpetually owned by all of humanity. This mindset of collective ownership sounds nice in some ways, but it leads to some really destructive places pragmatically, and some really silly places ethically. If one considers all of Earth's resources to be in a constant state of collective ownership, then I could ethically justify taking your cell phone from you and keeping it for myself because it is made out of the Earth's resources, and if the Earth's resources belong to everyone, then they belong to me, and thus your cell phone is just as much mine as it is yours. For reasons like these, I think the rejection of personal land ownership, which is an ownership of portions of the Earth's resources, is necessary and helpful. And hopefully, by the time I'm through describing how land can become owned by someone, it will seem to be self-evident and it will naturally reveal itself as the reality of the world. Like most of what we have been talking about, ownership is about interpersonal human ethics. Moving land from the state of being unowned to being owned isn't about making a transaction with Mother Earth to own a part of her, or a contract with the trees, or strike a deal with the surrounding animals. One helpful way to think about ownership in general is in terms of strength of claim relative to another person. Owning previously unowned land is about making and demonstrating a claim of ownership on such land, which is a stronger claim than fellow human beings have on said land. The land and the resources are never going to offer up an objection to the one person who claims ownership over it. Only other people will. And so the claim merely needs to be relatively sturdier than the claim of anyone else. So how might a person establish a claim on the land strong enough to validate and evidence their claim? The process of moving land from an unowned to an owned state is called homesteading. There are a lot of variations on how one goes about the process, and they differ somewhat, but the basic idea is the same. John Locke, of Enlightenment fame, put forth the idea that land came to be owned when someone mixed their labor with it. Others have said, one needs to make something deemed an improvement on the land in order to have a valid claim of ownership. Some common law codes in the past have said that to make a claim on the land, one has to put up a fence around the area they are homesteading to establish ownership. These property theories all try to find a way of authenticating ownership through some effort exerted on the land by the homesteader. Reasonably, no one has ever really said that someone can make a valid claim on a piece of land or a resource by simply saying, "I call it." They have to actually do something with it in order for their claim of ownership to be valid. When it comes to substantiating a claim of ownership, one merely saying, "I own it," would be petty and unhelpful, even if said person called it first. It's easy to see how inadequate this is, as I could merely say right now, "I own all of the unowned land on earth." It would be absurd. Pretty much everyone recognizes this. Not only do most theories of homesteading discuss the homesteader exerting effort to confirm his pending claim of ownership on a piece of land, but they also include an idea called the first use principle. Once land moves from unowned to owned, it can't leave the hands of the owners without their permission. The first person to establish a claim on a piece of land is the rightful owner, regardless of who may try to establish a claim after that. One cannot take property from another by homesteading it better. If I put up a small fence around a piece of formerly unowned property to establish my ownership of the property, then it's mine. Someone else may come and put up a bigger and more sturdy fence around the perimeter I already set up, which would be construed as a considerably more valid claim on the piece of land if the land were still unowned. But since I am already the owner, trying to make a stronger claim on the land than I have would be pointless. In order to make a better claim than I had, the person making the fence around the perimeter of my property would need to have evidence that they did it first. People in local communities in an anarchic society will probably establish some sort of agency or voluntary group who keeps a record of who owns what piece of land at any given time, or if no one owns such a piece of land. As of now, this sort of information is kept by the local courthouse. In a free society, there will be no such thing as government-run courts, but I find it likely humans will find such a service, that of maintaining and updating records on a home or property, to be helpful in a world without rulers, and so we'll find a way to do so. There are many reasons an available record held and verified by a third party in a local region might be considered valuable. Such a thing provides the owner of the land more evidence of his claim should anyone dispute it. In addition, it seems reasonable most security companies or insurance companies would want some third-party evidence and affirmation that the home and property they were protecting indeed belonged to the person who said it belonged to them. Otherwise, they may accidentally end up defending a piece of property from the rightful owner of it, which would be pretty bad for business. Once the owner of a property would like to sell their land, it would behoove them to have the strongest verifiable evidence of their ownership possible, as the buyer is going to want to make sure they are purchasing the property from the rightful owner, otherwise they aren't really purchasing anything. There are many and will be many motivating factors to have some entity other than the property owner keep track of who is the rightful owner. As to who will do this, it may very well be different in different locales. Just depends on what people want to use. It's not hard to think of who might keep tabs on property deeds and titles, but I'll try to help you out anyway. A local court may maintain such records, paid for by anyone who owns property and wants such things on file, or something the court deems necessary enough for trying cases that it pays the minimal cost of record keeping itself. A third-party arbitration company may keep updated records on file security companies may find themselves maintaining records of property ownership to be more prepared in handling disputes with individuals or with other security companies. Local communities may decide to have a dirt cheap website to keep the information about land ownership on and available to everyone. Google probably already keeps a pretty close to accurate record of land and resource ownership without even trying to. It's just a byproduct of having access to the information available on the internet. I give possibilities to reaffirm a simple assertion. One doesn't need a government to figure out who owns what. As long as we're talking about land ownership, I should mention briefly that government claims of ownership over any land is suspect, and coming by legitimate claims of ownership governments have made over property is quite difficult. The only reason I mention such a thing is because there are some who seek to justify the behavior of government by talking about taxes as rent and talking about the U.S. population as guests on the property of the government. The underlying assumption of such rationalizations of evil is that the government is the rightful owner of all 3.8 million square miles of land it claims to rule. Such claims of government ownership over the totality of the U.S. landmass are easily shown to be illegitimate. We could spend a long time talking about the American Indian population in the U.S., but I suspect just the mention of it is enough. Obviously, there were millions of American Indians who were rightful owners of portions of land in the U.S., who were unjustly driven off of it, and then the land was declared to be owned by the government. This is not a legitimate way to acquire land. Someone built a house in the middle of nowhere on land I currently own. There was no evidence to be found of prior ownership, and no one stepped forward to argue against such a claim of ownership. Ownership established. Then the property was broken up, sold repeatedly, and the ownership has been traced from the homesteader all the way to me. Now that I purchased the land, who has a claim on it? Just me. No third party can come in and arbitrarily declare ownership over my property and force me to pay rent on it because they have no case for their rightful ownership. The only claim of ownership the government can muster over my property is to say that we claim to own it, and if you don't pay us rent on it, we'll kill you and take it. Only crazy people think this would be an adequate claim to evidence ownership. What about the land government bought? Lots of the land purchased by the U.S. was purchased from other nations, whether they're the Iroquois Nation or the Russian. One reason these purchases are not legitimate or binding is that it is unlikely either the Iroquois or the Russian nations had anything approximating rightful claims of ownership over all of the land they said they owned and then sold. Even if a government purchases land from a private owner who has valid ownership claims over what he sold to them, there is still the very big problem of where the government got the money. How could they afford to purchase large tracts of land? They first took money from the taxpayer using violence and the threat of violence, and then used the money they stole to buy the land. A thief can't purchase land and rightfully own it until he has paid restitution to those from whom he stole. Otherwise, the land rightfully belongs to his victims so they can recoup their losses. The government purchased land with the property they stole from others, and so any claims of ownership they make on land they purchased are illegitimate. The land belongs to those they stole from. One may be able to make the case that the government owns land which has been donated to it by a person who acquired it rightfully. Perhaps if someone donates land to the government to become a park or something, one could make the case such donations legitimately belong to the government. However, this is only a really tiny chunk of the land they claim to own, and one could make the case that such resources, even if donated, rightfully belonged to everyone who the government violently took money from. At any rate, any sort of justification of government, which relies on the idea of the government rightfully owning every square inch of land in the U.S., falls apart like slow-cooked pork roast. Enough about government's non-ownership of land. I realize I went through the ideas kind of fast, but I hope the reasoning made sense. Let me know if you need clarification on anything. Back to land. What sorts of rights go along with land ownership? It would take too long to list all of the rights one has with their land, and I'm sure I would miss many. The rights which go along with land ownership are similar to the rights which go along with anything one owns. What rights do I have over my own body? I can do what I want with it, as long as I am not violating the rights of others. What rights do I have over my land? I can do what I want with it, as long as I am not violating the rights of others. Still, there are some unique aspects to land people don't often think about. By using one's land in a particular way, a person also acquires some rights to the land around them. When someone buys or otherwise acquires a piece of land, they have a just expectation that the land will remain in the condition it was when it was purchased or homesteaded. By that, I of course don't mean it's realistic to expect acts of nature not to ruin my land. But I have the natural right of ownership to expect no other person will interfere with my use of my land. Just as I have a natural right for no other human to interfere with the use of my body. If I plant a crop, you can't come on my property and poison it so all of my crops die. Likewise, if I plant a crop in an area before you arrive, and you acquire some land right next to me, and build a giant building adjacent to my land, and it blocks the sun from getting to my crops, and they die from lack of sunlight, you are also liable for the death of my crops. Even though you have never entered my property, you have damaged my property and interfered with my use of it. I acquired my property in a certain condition, and your actions, even though they occurred outside of my property boundaries, have negatively changed the condition of my property. These rights of not having my use of my property interfered with by others, even if they are acting externally to my property boundaries, are called easements. Many easements are written into the titles of properties as they are developed and are noted on the titles of surrounding properties. An easement can be developed without writing it into the title of the land, but it need not be to be valid, as long as one can provide strong evidence that, for example, they were using the sunlight for their crops before the property adjacent to them was acquired. For the reasons mentioned above, it's helpful for all if such easements, which impact what other people can do with their property, are explicitly written down and recognized by a third party. This type of thing is very common in modern titles. For example, utility companies have an easement on my property of 10 feet in to work on, repair, and replace their infrastructure for water, gas, and electricity. I was made aware of this easement when I first purchased the property. So even though the land is mine, the utility companies, prior to my purchase of the land, have acquired a right to use a small portion of it temporarily on rare occasion for their purposes, either by establishing such a right through prior use, or by making an agreement with the previous landowner. I think the easiest way to think about the concept of easements on the land of others is to think about access rights to one's property. If I homestead a piece of land way out in the middle of unknown land, I have developed a right of access to said land. This means that if someone were to, say, buy up or homestead a plot of land which surrounds mine, there would be an easement on their property related to my property. The easement would be that I needed to be allowed to access my property by going through theirs. For them to put up a fence on their land, which prevented me from getting to my property, would be for them to aggress against me and my property. they would be directly interfering with my ability to use my land. If I had no reasonable way to get there, they would have essentially stolen it from me as I could no longer use it. Such interference is an act of aggression which justifies the use of defensive force to reacquire my property. It would be similar to me having a car parked in a public place and a group of people surrounds my vehicle and interlocks arms so I cannot get to it. They haven't touched me, they haven't touched my car, but their initiating actions have essentially taken my car from me by restricting access to it. They initiated force on me by putting me in a position where I have to use defensive force to get to my property. The actions of the one who buys up all the property surrounding me and then tries to prevent me from getting to my land are parallel and equally aggressive. Rights of access to property naturally arise from property use, which creates easements on any property purchased around me in the future. Property rights includes the right to have no one damage my property or interfere with my use of it, so long as my usage isn't violating the rights of others. For those of you who are familiar with titles and deeds and abstracts and the like, you will notice I'm not suggesting anything too much different than what exists now. It's a pretty simple and effective way of determining ownership. See, I don't think everything's bad. I would just suggest a mechanism of recording and enforcing ownership which doesn't require the existence of a violent and coercive monopoly, aka government. The reason I discuss these concepts is to give people some familiarity with property rights, because they are important to understand before talking about environmental protection in a free society. If you're wondering about the enforcement of these violations of someone else's property rights, I would suggest re-listening to the last podcast, episode 11, and then sending further questions you might have my way. My answer regarding how property rights could be enforced would not differ greatly than my examples of theft, property damage, and contract violations in last week's episode. Well, I warned y'all I didn't find this stuff interesting, and I was right. I'm getting super bored. Let's wrap this up. Next week, we'll conclude this 3-week section with a discussion of environmental protections. After that, I may begin talking about Romans 13, which is the most commonly used scripture to object to anarchy, so it should be discussed with some thoroughness. Or maybe I'll be in the mood for something else. We'll see. If you'd like to listen to past episodes or find a tiny bit of information, you can visit www.christianarchy.net. You also find some other ways to contact me there if for any reason you would like to engage in a discussion. Thanks for joining me. Have fun today. Later.